Good morning. Glad that you're here with us today, and I just want to echo what Wayne said a little bit earlier, that you'd feel right at home. Don't be shy to grab some more food and coffee there in the back at any time. So my name is Paul, and I am a church planting intern here. I'm an intern here at the church, and it's amazing to be here with you today. And I don't know if this is your first time with us, but you've kind of stepped into a really exciting conversation that's been going on for several weeks now. And it's this conversation that this video was talking about, how we can dream together, what if? You know, dreaming, and that means that we look around in the world around us, we look at our families, we look around in our city, and we're stepping into, we're intentionally looking for the problems and the brokenness in our city, and we're not going to step back and just see it, leave it there, but we want to step into them. And as we step into the problems, we're dreaming with God. You know, we're brainstorming ideas and bringing them to God in conversation, wondering, you know what? What if I was meant for more? What if I wasn't meant to just work and just kind of do this thing? But what if God is truly a God of restoration, what would he have me do to join him in dealing with the brokenness and dealing with the problems that we see all the time in the world around us? That if God is truly a restoration, what is a God of restoration, what is my role that he wants me to play? How can I get involved? And it's been really incredible to see kind of the dialogue that's come out of this. I don't know if you're a part of a dinner group, but we've been in my dinner group this past week and for the past several weeks just kind of walking through this, you know, dreaming. You know what? What could God do in our city if we joined him as we step into these things, believing that God is truly who he says he is? And what's interesting is a couple weeks ago we invited you to share your dreams with us. Right, through the online program that Wayne was talking about, there was a question there, a weekly question. And we said, you know what, share your dreams with us. And it started this really cool dialogue of people just sharing what's on their heart, ranging from, you know, the passion for the kids and the youth in our community, or just kind of ranging out to the trash that's here in Jersey City, trying to improve what the city can look like. But actually, from that, I want to share with you, a few new teams have actually sprouted up, and they've taken steps to impact the community. One of them is a signing ministry. There's a lady within our church family named Jessica Nierhoof, and she saw that there was a need. You know, there were some people attending the services in one of our sites who are hearing impaired, and there was no way for them to understand. And so she put up a table last week at the Impact Fair and is starting to gather a team. She's dreaming of a space here in the front and the different sites of people that can interpret the messages and interpret the services so that people can actually understand what's going on. It's really awesome to see that. Another one that I want you to know about is there's a lady, Brittany Davies, and she heard of this program called the Jersey City's Adopt-A-Lot program, and she thought, you know what can we do together as a church? And she is dreaming, and she's taking steps towards taking an abandoned lot and changing it and building and working into it so that it can become a place, a community garden, a place for people to grow fresh produce, and not just for us, but she's thinking we can take those fresh produce and donate it to the shelters in the area. Really awesome to see, you know, I wouldn't have thought of that, but these people are seeing the opportunities and taking steps. She also put a table up in the Impact Fair last week, and she now has a team, I think, of 10 to 13 people, and it's just been amazing to see people not just dreaming and having the conversations, because talking is cool, yeah, that's one good step, but then people are actually taking steps with their dream with God. You know, it's awesome to see that, you know. It's something that I've really realized. That, you know what, when I think about Jersey City, when I think about Hoboken and what God's been doing through Hoboken Grace, and just this thing that you've kind of stepped into this morning, God is really at work in this area. And we have an amazing opportunity to jump into what it is that he's doing. I don't think it's a mistake that you're here and you have your experiences, you have your background, but I wonder what it is for you and I to jump into it with him. And I want to show you this video that, you know, for the past few weeks, we've been showing interviews of different people within our church family how they've engaged this whole idea of dreaming with God. And here, when you see this video, it's just amazing because sometimes I'm blown away by the impact of how God can use us. And I kind of think it's smaller, but then it blows my mind to know that, you know what, the reach of what God's doing is not just local, but it's global across the world through the missions teams. And even with what you'll hear in this video, you're going to see our lead pastor, Chris High, interview one of our members, and he'll talk about his involvement with an organization, a nonprofit in Sierra Leone. And as you know, I've been watching the news. They were there kind of setting some things up, but then now they're in the heart of a huge, urgent crisis in our world right now. So why don't you take a look at this video. Just give it a second.
If you would, Jim, just really quickly, kind of give us an introduction to how you got connected with this organization and what you've been a part of as they're asking this question, what if, inside of Sierra Leone?
Yeah, sure. So I'll just give you a little context. Growing up, I spent a number of years in Zimbabwe, and one of the things my dad did with me was he took me into Mozambique, where there was a civil war going on at the time, and he took me to refugee camps. And so I saw firsthand, you know, the pretty awful things that people do to each other. You know, I struggled for a long time with that, just the injustice of how I had so much and there are so many people who, you know, seem so hopeless. You know, I got involved in a number of economic development organizations as I grew up and was sort of disillusioned with the way that people would sort of put products or systems in place without necessarily evaluating what the needs were. And a couple years ago, I got connected with World Hope. Really, they started as a grassroots organization during the Civil War in Sierra Leone, just out of a need to get emergency medical supplies and various things delivered out to people. After the war, that turned into a project to basically help fit people with prosthetic limbs, because one of the things that happened was people lost arms, lost legs during the war there. And so, you know, they turned from the one to the other. And then over time, that turned into seeing a number of other needs in the community. So they have a shelter for women that have been caught in the human trafficking. They had a large microfinance operation. They have a water sanitation project. But the thing that I got plugged into was something called their special economic zone. And basically the idea with this was to bring large businesses into Sierra Leone and help connect them up with local businesses. You know, it's a tough place as a foreigner to think about making an investment in. But you know, they have sort of a tax treaty. They help them with connections with the government, how to find their way around the country. But because World Hope has such a good connection with the locals, one of the big businesses that they brought in was a juice manufacturer. And so what they do, rather than having this juice company you know, source their juice from just, you know, a company that produces fruit there, they actually used some of their microfinance clients to go out and form collectives of these rural farmers and bring that into this juice factory. So basically connecting the formal sector, you know, a proper business as you and I would know it, to these microfinance clients and sort of helping break the cycle of poverty beyond just sort of making a loan to them through microfinance and paying it back, actually training them in how to grow the fruit and how to be a supplier for another business. So that's kind of the different things that they've done.
Yeah, and so there's just been this development, constantly asking this question, what if? And then now, as we sit here today and we talk about this, there's actually something that's happening there that's pretty urgent.
Yeah, so, you know, probably a lot of you are already familiar with, you know, Ebola and some of the issues that's created. Sierra Leone is right in the middle of that, and so World Hope is kind of in crisis mode. You know, the special economic zone is basically shut down. They can't get the fruit into the factory. You know, their shelter, they can't get the women relocated out to places to get them out of that. The farmers can't grow their crops because they can't go across the border to buy the supplies they need. Basically, everybody is in lockdown mode, and so World Hope again has had to kind of transition from, you know, some of these development things that they've been doing back to more what they were doing originally, some of the emergency relief work and actually going out. They're the ones, because they're the largest NGO in Sierra Leone, they're actually delivering medical supplies out to these places. They are the ones training people in how to stay safe with Ebola. You know, they're the ones that are digging the wells and providing the sanitation work in a lot of these places. So you know, they've had to kind of rethink themselves completely again.
Yeah, and if you haven't read about it, what's happening with the Ebola virus in countries like Sierra Leone is unbelievable. And you've obviously been able to see personal stories of that and how it's affecting those who are on the ground, and specifically this organization that has done really a remarkable job of not just doing what everyone else does, but really just dreaming of what's possible. And so, you know, we've been in conversation about how Hoboken Grace could be part of this as we move forward and part of this organization. But then with what's happening right now, how can we be part of this now?
Yeah, sure. You know, I think the real need right now is for them to have a community come around them. You know, obviously they need prayer to stay safe and to be wise about what they're doing. My friend John, who's over there a lot, his driver actually just died last week, not of Ebola, but of a stroke, because he was just afraid to go to the hospital. And so, you know, just the need for prayer for everybody there, but also financial support, because you know they need just to be able to continue the logistics of what they're doing, and get the supplies out there, and to be able to continue digging wells and, you know, doing some of these things that are just so urgently needed.
And so what we're going to do today is on your online program in the giving, we've actually set it up with your PushPay app, or whether you're using the online giving portal, where you're going to see that there's the regular contributions, and then there's a second designation, which is World Hope. And currently, there's a donor who has agreed to match up to $50,000 of what's given, just because of the fact that this is really is an incredible organization. That is doing exactly what we're talking about. And so if you're here and you want to be part of restoration in this way, and one of the things that's so important about what we're talking about here, one of the reasons why I wanted Jim to come and for us to be able to talk to him, is that this idea of dreaming, it's so much more than what we typically think of. And we typically limit it by our location, or we limit it by what we've seen before. But Jim is an example of someone who saw this and began to dream of, okay, how could I be part of this? And how could I be really a significant part of this? And has been, where he has this relationship with these guys and has been a part of this for quite some time. And so, you know, as we move through this, I want to challenge you to dream not just locally. I think we need to, Jesus says that we need to go out into Jerusalem, Samaria, to the ends of the earth, and to begin dreaming about, okay, how do I impact my coworkers? How do I impact Northern New Jersey? How do I impact the world? These, you never know the dreams that God's going to have for you. Nehemiah was 800 miles from Jerusalem when this dream begins. You don't know what it's going to look like. But if you're here and you want to be part of that restoration, you're going to have the opportunity to be able to give that way. And then as that comes in this week, we're going to send that directly to them. So you'll be able to just choose World Hope, and then above and beyond your giving, be able to give to that, and we'll get that to them as soon as possible to come alongside of them in this restoration that they're working to see happen right now. So would you guys thank Jim for coming and sharing that?
You know, what's cool about that, so that was a couple weeks ago, that interview. And as you heard Chris say, that there's a donor that's willing to match up to $50,000. And so I asked, you know, how much has the giving been? As of this past week, our church has donated $15,000. And so that means $30,000 are going to logistically help them over there. And so if this is something that you want to jump into, it's pretty amazing, this chance that we have, that for dollar, someone will match what you give. That opportunity is open for us today here. So if you go to hobongrace.info, then you click into the Hamilton site, you can give. And one of the options, I think you click on reference, and there's a drop-down menu to give to World Hope. And it's really cool to hear Jim's story because, I mean, they were there setting economic systems in place, and, you know, they saw brokenness already, and they were trying to, you know, be a part of that restoration, and then this crisis hits. And so they shift gears, and they were just there, just happened to be there. And now they're helping in any ways that they can. You know, it's incredible to think about what can happen if we really dream with God. You know, as you hear these stories, I don't know if you've been coming for a few weeks or not, but maybe this really amps you up. You know, to hear these stories of the signing ministry and the community garden, and just been in conversations with different people in our family, just amazing to see people take steps. And what often happens is for a lot of us, we get really excited and we want to take steps, so we start, you know, building momentum, we rev up, we get excited, we talk to people. And then before you know it, the inevitable comes and problems just pour on this dream that we started. You know, it's just a reality that there's going to be a point, especially if you go towards something great, that you're going to hit a wall. There's going to be obstacles that come. It's going to get frustrating. It's going to be a stressful process for a lot of the things that we're thinking of doing. You know, and there's actually going to be people that are opposed to what it is that we want to dream of. That's the reality of how things are. Because, you know, something that we need to realize is when we embark on something great, there's going to be opposition. When we embark on something great, there's going to be opposition. And I think that makes sense to us now, and it's something that we probably learned as a kid, and it's something that I realized kind of looking back. You know, whenever I tried to start something, there's always something that I faced as a kid. It reminded me, when I was growing up, my dad would take our family out and we'd go golfing. You know, a few years ago, there was a driving range here in Jersey City across Lincoln Park on 440. We would go there pretty often, you know. And not gonna lie, some people called me a child prodigy when it came to golf. I was pretty gifted. But mind you, I never actually played on a real golf course. We were always at the driving range or we went to a smaller par three setup. But I was great. Good swing and everything. And I remember at that same time, Tiger Woods was just, he wasn't what he was today. He was kind of this fresh up-and-comer, and he was doing really well. He just won the Masters. You know, he's half Asian. I'm trying to think, maybe I'm going to be the first Filipino-American in the, you know, doing work in the PGA golf tournaments or something. And, you know, I started to ask myself that question. You know, what if? What if this is how God would want me to be? And I remember specifically, there was one day, we were at that same driving range, and there was a nice guy with good intentions, this guy. He was in the booth next to us. He was doing his, you know, practicing his swing, and he saw this little guy, me, and just with my mushroom haircut, just kind of swinging away and doing well. And he said, oh, let me help you out. You know, change your grip to look like this. You know, when you follow through your swing, make sure you're focusing on this part of your body as you shift your weight. And this guy, I completely blame him for ruining my chances to be a professional golfer. After that session, I might be a little bitter, a little bit, but after that session, I was done. My swing was terrible. Would always kind of swing to the side, and it was just bad. You know, because when we embark on something great, you're gonna face opposition. And obviously, that's just a ridiculous example. You know, but you think about it for yourself as you kind of set up dreams and you set up goals for yourself. There's gonna be a point where things don't just fall in place. You and I understand that. But what's interesting about that is in the way that we function, the way that we live our life, we kind of think the opposite. So we start this dream, we start taking steps, and it gets really exciting. And all of a sudden, we start to face problems. And it's as if we're surprised. You know, we think, if this is what God wanted me to do, if this is what dream that he had for me, then it would be easy, and things would just fall in place. We start to think, maybe I'm doing something wrong. You know, conflict and problems and stress, that's not supposed to be part of this formula. You know, things should just magically go into place. But even more than that, even more than just things being wrong, we think maybe God is against this plan. We think, you know what, this is not how it's supposed to be. I think God has closed this door. And it makes us feel like that in the back. You know, it's just something that is really interesting, because when we take these steps and we think God is for us, we think, you know, the doors will just automatically open. You know, we come to an elevator and someone's going to hold the elevator door for us. When we're driving, all the lights are always green. We always find a parking spot, and things will be smooth. It'll be stress-free, and everything will be great. But when you embark on something great, there's going to be opposition. We cannot expect it to be stress-free. And so as we're thinking and dreaming with God and, you know, bring all our ideas to God and sifting through everything that we have, and when God makes something clear to us, you know, this is what I want you to pursue, we can't expect it to be easy. We can't. I wish I can tell you that. I wish I can tell you, you know what, if you're going to start this project, you're going to go move forward with it, everything's going to just fall in place. And that's kind of what we think. That's what I think. But we're going to face obstacles. You know, we've been studying this man for the past several weeks who embarked on something huge, something amazing, and he also faced opposition. We've been studying this man in the Old Testament named Nehemiah. And when we first introduced him a few weeks ago in the first chapter of the book, we see him as a cupbearer to a foreign king. He's an Israelite man, and at this point in history, the Israelites have been destroyed. They've been exiled out of their own country. And so we see Nehemiah, and he's working in the king's court to a foreign country. And so while he's working there, which is not a bad life, he just drinks wine and eats the food of the king before to test that it's poison, make sure it's not poisoned. But he's living that life, and then he hears this terrible news about how his homeland is still in complete ruins. And when he hears this news, it's one of those news that it just shattered him, shook his whole world. And immediately he came to God in prayer, just pouring out his heart. You know, this is not how it's supposed to be. This is the problem. This is brokenness that's not supposed to be and how I see the world. So he began to pray with God. And several months later, we heard this, where he comes to the king and the king notices that he's acting differently. And miraculously, the king sends him off with a letter of approval, sends him resources. And so now you put yourself in Nehemiah's position. He's going back, this cupbearer. He has no credentials, but he's going back to his home country. And he's about to start the restoration. He starts rebuilding the walls. He builds a house for himself. He gathers the leaders, and things start to go well. And as the momentum is building, the inevitable comes, and there's opposition that he has to face. And so why don't we take a look at here in Nehemiah chapter 4. And there's these local leaders that you'll see, local governors and leaders in their area who don't want Jerusalem to go back to the way it used to be because they're now in power. And if Jerusalem steps up and comes back, it's going to ruin their power. And so chapter 4, verse 1, it says, Sanballat was very angry when he learned that we were rebuilding the wall. See, right away, people are angry. He flew into a rage and mocked the Jews, saying in front of his friends and the Samaritan army officers, what does this bunch of poor, feeble Jews think they're doing? Do they think that they can build the wall in a single day by just offering a few sacrifices? Do they actually think that they can make something of stones from a rubbish heap and charred ones at that? And then Tobiah the Ammonite, who was standing beside him, remarked, that stone wall would collapse if even a fox walked along the top of it. And let me pause here for a second, because this scene is just ridiculous to me. It's going to be flashbacks of high school, you know, the bullies in the corner just kind of cracking jokes and high-fiving. I mean, look what Tobiah said. Even if a fox walked the top of your wall, it's going to fall over, and they just, you know, high-five and whatever. It's like, it's ridiculous. But obviously, I'm kind of belittling, like, they have armies around them. But look how Nehemiah and the people respond. They don't stop, even with all this chatter going around. It says in verse 6, at last, the wall was completed to half its height around the entire city, for the people had worked with enthusiasm. So things are going well, and then Sanballat, even though they're talking and all this stuff, everything's going well, they build half the wall, and then Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabs, the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the work was going ahead and that the gaps in the wall of Jerusalem were being repaired, and they were furious. They all made plans to come and fight against Jerusalem, all of them, and throw us into confusion. They all got together to destroy the Israelites and just stop all of their work. And so you think you put yourself in Nehemiah's position. This is a problem, right? There's enemies towards this plan. But then not only that, but look, there's stuff outside, but there's people with problems inside. It says in verse 10, then the people of Judah began to complain. The workers are getting tired. There's so much rubble to be moved. We will never be able to build this wall by ourselves. And so there's an enemy outside. There's opposition inside. At first it was scoffing and mocking, but now there's actual physical danger. And not only that, the people inside that are on board, that they're working, they're complaining now. They kind of pause after a long day. They're sweating. They look around. There's too much rubble. I don't know if I want to keep doing this. So there's opposition from both sides. So what does Nehemiah do? Does he back down? No, it says in verse 13, Nehemiah, so he says, so I placed armed guards behind the lowest part of the wall in the exposed areas. I stationed the people to stand guard by families armed with swords, spears, and bows. Then as I looked over the situation, I called together the nobles and the rest of the people and said to them, don't be afraid of the enemy. Remember the Lord who is great and glorious, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. Then in verse 16, from then now on, only half my men worked while the other half stood guard with spears, shields, bows, and coats of mail. The leaders stationed themselves behind the people of Judah who were building the wall. Listen to this. The laborers carried on their work with one hand supporting the load and then one hand holding a weapon. All the builders had a sword belted to their side. The trumpeter stayed with me to sound the alarm. Then I explained to the nobles and the officials and all the people, the work is very spread out and we are widely separated from each other along the wall. When you hear the blast of the trumpet, rush to wherever it is sounding. Then our God will fight for us. So here's Nehemiah. He sees a problem. He hears of the brokenness. And somehow all these doors open up. He builds momentum. He's now half the wall has been built, even with people mocking them. But now there's physical danger. Armies are gathering, getting ready to attack them. The people inside that are actually working are now building with fear, and they're getting overwhelmed by the task. I think if this was a modern-day project, many of us, including me, would think, you know what, there are some legitimate concerns here. You might need to reconsider. Like Nehemiah, you need to consider shutting this whole thing down. You might think, you know what, these families are in danger. I'm not going to have them bring weapons with them to work. I'm not going to post guards. This is crazy. Not only is there physical danger that people might get hurt, families might get hurt, but the work's going to be destroyed, and they're not even 100% on board with me anymore. They're complaining. I think it's time to quit. And so often that's how we would approach things. But look at Nehemiah. It's amazing. Just some of the things that he said. He said, but we prayed to our God and guard the cities day and night to protect ourselves. And then he said in another verse, hear us, our God, for we are being mocked. He went straight to God. You see this throughout the whole book. He's always going to God in prayer. His trust never shook. Then he tells the people, he gathers all the leaders and the people. He says, don't be afraid of the enemy. Remember the Lord who is great and glorious, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. And he closes out with saying, our God will fight for us. His trust in God never wavered. He knew that God was the one that wanted this work. He believed that God was a God of restoration, and this is a dream that he was to pursue. And so even when the obstacles came, even when they showed itself, even when there was physical danger and people were complaining, he did not stop. He didn't let that stop the mission. And look at this in verse 17, just the beautiful picture of their commitment to what they were doing. The laborers carried on their work with one hand supporting their load and one hand holding a weapon. I mean, think about this. Long hours, day and night, scheduling your whole family going to build this wall. And this is not even your job. You're not a builder. You have your own job, but you're setting that aside in order to rebuild this wall. Not only that, there's people threatening you and threatening your family. The leaders are saying, you know what, when you go to work tomorrow, why don't you bring a weapon with you, because things might get crazy. And they continued at it. They stayed at the mission that God had put on their heart. And I think about this, and you think about the amazing leadership that Nehemiah had, the faith that he had. I don't know exactly what it was that held him there, that let him stay so firm and founded. But I mean, maybe he just looked back at the history of how God's been working in his people the whole time. You look back to Moses as they were, the Exodus out of Egypt, there was conflict, there was going to be a problem, there was danger. You think about Joshua as they crossed over into Jericho, there's going to be some issues. He realized, you know what, God has led us to take steps before, and there was always conflict, and maybe this is one of those things that we have to hold firm and trust in God. You know, as we take steps together as a church family, dreaming of what if, you know, God, how would you want to use me? How can you let me be a part of the restoration? We're going to face problems. And I won't know all the reasons of why, but I know one thing. I can see from my life and I can see it here. God can use those problems and those conflicts to develop you. Can you imagine Nehemiah's experience and trust in God now? It's been incredible because, you see, God is passionate about the restoration of the world, but that doesn't take away from his passion for you. He doesn't lose sight of you. You know what? If you're in the thick of it and you're going through these issues, he has not lost sight of you. He's still pursuing you. He's still passionate about you. And in this experience, maybe he wants you to grow in your faith. He wants you to grow in your experience of him. We have to keep going. Oftentimes, God can use conflict as a catalyst for growth in us. You know, it reminds me, several years ago, so I'm a terrible swimmer, and my uncle was trying to teach me how to swim. And I did this pathetic thing of whenever I would swallow water when I was doing laps, I would just kind of bobble there, just kind of floating there. And so he wanted me to understand, you know what, you need to keep going. And so he said, you know what, swim laps back and forth. And he said, I want you to swallow water. Just do it. And actually, my uncle was kind of interesting, so I thought he was trying to end me, but he wasn't. He was actually trying to teach me a principle. You know what, you got to keep going. You can't just stop in the middle. You swallow some water. It's a principle that's stuck with me. You know what? Obstacles are going to come. Problems are going to show up. You can't just, if God has made it clear that this is your mission, you can't stop. You know what's amazing? You know, so Nehemiah is a great example for us to learn from. But I was thinking about it this past week, man. You want to know an example of someone that fought through obstacles, fought through rejection, and fought through suffering, unjust suffering? Can't help but think about Jesus. He came to his own, and his own rejected him. People that he knew and loved just absolutely did not accept him. And he experienced rejection and suffering beyond what we can even fathom. You know, he would teach about this. He would tell his closest followers, you know, I'm going to suffer. I want you to know that. And this bothered his followers because they would say, you know what? We're on the winning team. This is not supposed to be a problem. There's actually one conversation that Peter has, one of his closest friends. Peter takes him aside. It says in this verse, he said, heaven forbid, Lord, because Jesus is teaching about how he's going to suffer. And Peter said, this will never happen to you. Jesus turned to Peter and said, get away from me, Satan. You are a dangerous trap to me. You are seeing things merely from a human point of view, not from God's. According to Jesus here, from God's point of view, suffering would be part of the plan. He understood that, you know what, in order to fight for us, in order to fight for this plan, this dream that the Father had of restoring us into his family, he would experience rejection. He would experience problems. And he was willing to fight through that regardless of it. We have to trust God and push forward with this mission. Because knowing that Nehemiah had to do this, he was a great example, you know, the weapon in one hand and working with the other. But then Jesus, rejection on the nth degree, a level that we can't even take. But he did that for you, and he did that for me. He wanted us to be part of that family. He was committed to that no matter what. So you know what? For us today, as we dream of the what ifs, and it's exciting to talk about the possibilities, we need to understand that as we take steps towards our dream, we will face obstacles. And so if you're really asking yourself this question, what if I was meant for more? What if God would use me? You got to understand that, yeah, that's a life of excitement and joy and fulfillment, and it's amazing to join God with what he's doing. But understand that coming with that is stress, frustration, obstacles. And if you don't want that, then you can avoid it. But if you're really asking yourself, am I to be part of this? Then we have to be willing to fight the battle. You know, Jesus fought it for us. He fought that battle, and he suffered through it, and he won. And now, we have an amazing opportunity to demonstrate that same love to the people around us so that we would be willing to pursue these dreams and experience loss for someone else's gain. Experience frustration, wall after wall, and closed doors in order to open the door for somebody else. This whole idea of pursuing the dream with God is not, it's not for the faint-hearted. It's for men and women of faith that would trust God even when things get difficult. Jesus fought that battle, and he restored us into the family. He provided us new life with him. And now we have the opportunity to be reborn. And now that we're reborn, we can rebuild with him. That's what this life would look like. So what if we were meant for more? Can you imagine what it'd be like to be part of a community of people that would pursue dreams even when times get tough? Even in the midst of obstacles and stress and frustration, people would wonder, why are you doing that? Just stop. No, this is what God wants me to do. May we be a church, a community of people that would not turn a blind eye to the problems, but actually intentionally look for them and step into them, dreaming with God. And even when the problems come, we don't stop. We fight through, we battle through the obstacles in commitment that people would come to understand God and how he restores us into the family and how God restores this world. Will you pray with me? God, it's amazing to see what you've been doing in our church family and the possibilities of what can be as we dream of what you can do here in Jersey City. And it's awesome to have these conversations, just brainstorming and think of all these things that you may want us to do. And as we sift through all those ideas and as we find out what you want us to pursue, God, we understand that it can get difficult, just like it did for Nehemiah. But God, may that image burn in our brains of how they came working with one hand and weapon in the other, ready for the battle. And so, God, as we pursue dreams, may we be ready for the battle so that we can fight for people and fight for our families, our neighbors, the people on our street, the people in our city, the people in this world. God, this is what we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.